Good morning. My name is Greg Frank. I'm the hearings officer hearing the case this morning. This is case number 212008. It is a Bureau of Development Services case naming Ms. Cynthia Hilliard as respondent. What I'd like to do before we get started with all the important stuff about the case is have you identify yourself for the record, please. We'll start on this side. First name, last name, spell your last name, give us your mailing address, please.
Mitchell R. McKee, M-C-K-E-E, Senior Housing Inspector, City of Portland Development Services, 1900 Southwest 4th Avenue.
And sir, are you representing Ms. Hilliard?
Yes.
If you'll identify yourself, and let me just make one comment. This is a recorded hearing, and this is different than being down at the courthouse where you just can sort of wander around and say things. Must speak into the microphone. These microphones are very sensitive to what's happening, but they lose their effectiveness when you get any distance. The distance you're at now will not work. So you're going to need the microphone right in front of you. The recording of this hearing will become available within about 3 business days usually. Sometimes it's the very same day. Sometimes it takes as long as 7 days, but typically it's around 3 days or less, the recording. You would go to our website, which is on our cards in the back. You'd be able to go to the hearing recordings, and then you can navigate yourself through the process, but it's based on case name and number, and or number, not always sure. So with that, if you'll identify yourself for the record, please.
My name is David Hall, H-A-L-L. My Oregon State Bar number is 74122. I'm the attorney for Cynthia Hilliard.
Your address, please.
1432 East Burnside, Portland, Oregon, 97214.
All right. This is a what we refer to here as a code case. And a code case is one that is initiated by the City of Portland. And as such, we treat them much as we would a plaintiff in a case, as they present their case first. With that in mind, any witnesses you wish to call, or yourself, and because oftentimes we have folks who are not represented here or do not have legal counsel, as I permit those folks to call themselves as a witness and testify on whatever side they're on. Those folks who may wish to testify may only do so if called by either Mr. Hall or Mr. McKee. So this isn't, I live in the neighborhood and I want to say the following things. This doesn't work. This is a public, open to the public hearing, but it's not a public hearing as everyone gets the right to speak. All right, a couple other things, then I'll allow you to move along. I'm primarily directing my comments to Mr. Hall because if you do any trial work, this is going to be a bit different than what you're used to. We have given you, it looks like this list, it's our exhibit list that we have. We make a list of anything that comes in to the file. Let me tell you how this differs from circuit court, and that is that nothing that is on that list has been admitted into the evidentiary record. Nothing. We do that because we have so many people that are unrepresented here that they don't understand what's admitted and what's not, and it takes longer to explain to them what is or isn't. So we start with a clean slate. So if you wish anything to come into the into the record today for my consideration, then you're going to have to ask it to be admitted, all right? And if there is a request for admission, I will give the opposing side an opportunity to object to its admission. So that is really different, and it catches some people by surprise as they say, well, how come you didn't make a decision based on the documents that we submitted? And I'm telling you right now, I will make it if, in fact, it's admitted into the record. The way we formatted the exhibit list is that it has a column for disposition, and so you can keep track, kind of scorecard baseball style, whether or not it's been offered, if it's been admitted or rejected from the record. So you'll know, and you can keep track of what's going on. And I'm sorry, I'm gonna, would you explain that? Because there, I have a note from my clerk about one of the exhibits, and I want to make sure we're straight on that.
The copies that have been provided to both sides should indicate that the final exhibit is number 35. There is one subsequent exhibit number that I have listed, which is a number 36, and that would be a returned mail memo that was from the hearings office to Mitch McKee. That's standard when we receive returned mail. I'm happy to provide an updated exhibit list. I think both sides have a copy of number 36, but that would be the only addition to what you have listed there.
Okay, thank you. All right, let me do one more comment and then I will pretty much be done. And I'm directing once again to Mr. Hall because you're the only attorney that I'm, at least I'm aware of here, and attorneys, who, especially the ones who do trial work, tend to find a process such as the administrative hearing that we're involved with a bit different because the rules of evidence that you're used to in circuit court really don't apply, at least 100%. In an administrative hearing, often we hear that there's an objection based on hearsay. I tend to negate that and simply say I'm going to admit it, but I will always take into consideration its credibility and its weight. But there are certainly cases in the state of Oregon that indicate that hearsay is sufficient basis for an entire decision. I don't like it very much, but it is. So hearsay objection, if in fact you want to offer it, is probably going to get rejected, but I certainly take into consideration any comments you may have with respect to credibility or weight. Other objections, for the most part, administrative hearings aren't very effective either. The one that is primarily considered by me is the relevancy. And if somebody suggests that something should come in their record and you do not believe it's relevant, that is really important to me because I don't want to be dealing with things that aren't relevant to this case. And I will uphold that objection almost every single time. But I just wanted to alert you at least to the exhibit issues, which are very different here, and the evidentiary issues, which are somewhat different here. With that, then, I tend not to have opening statements, so I'm going to ask, first of all, Mr. Hall, did you want to have an opening statement or do you want to go straight into the evidence? I always allow a closing argument.
I know.
Speak into the microphone, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm very familiar with administrative practices.
Cool. Good.
I'm going to waive opening statement at this point in time. I'd also ask the hearings officer to exclude any potential witnesses in this case.
That's fine. Who's anticipated Mr. McKee to be a witness on your behalf here?
I had not anticipated any specific person, but there are some people here who would like to make comments on the case as well.
Okay, this is really uncomfortable for you folks, but I am going to actually exclude you if you are a potential witness in this case. That simply means that you're outside. We will make sure somebody comes back in. My request would be, Mr. McKee and Mr. Hall, that if we have a witness who is here, that person be called early in the process to give them an opportunity not to miss a lot. And I'd also ask, as a matter of courtesy, that unless you anticipate rebuttal, I'm going to ask, are you anticipating rebuttal testimony? If you don't, if it's not anticipated, I'd ask that the person be able to stay the remainder of the hearing. But I will certainly listen to arguments on the other side of that. All right. So if you're going to be, yes, sir?
Mr. Frank, would you mind if I check with Mr. McKee? I haven't checked in, but I don't know if he even knows I'm here, but I do want to.
Yes, please. Go ahead, sir.
I'm also, I live next door to my wife, Janet. Yes, I would like to speak. I tend to come hearing down in my office, so that's my only time.
What's that?
Yeah. So, and I live next door.
I may stop looking at my wife.
Right. Yeah. But I want to listen to him. I'm here. And my timetable is only after the back of my office. But
It's really difficult, and this microphone system and the recording system is just difficult. I find myself feeling like I'm swallowing a thermometer. but you really do need to speak right into the microphone.
I have a witness, Your Honor, Mr. Mendez, and I'll ask him to go outside too.
Right.
Sit in here, they can't testify.
Mr. McKee, might I make a suggestion, is that rather than calling yourself as the first witness, you call somebody, you know, one of your witnesses that may have a time issue or is concerned about waiting outside.
I don't have any problem taking anybody out of order. I.
We'll call you in. I'm going to need you to move outside for a brief period of time, and then we'll start calling witnesses. Not going to be witnesses?
Not going to be witnesses.
All right. Any objections, Mr. Hall?
No.
All right.
I do have one witness, Paul Silver. And he would like to testify earlier than later, so I can call him prior to myself.
All right. Mr. Hall is not going to have an opening statement. I'm assuming you will not as well.
No, it's not necessary.
All right. If you want to call your first witness, and if that's Mr. Silvers.
First, I think I'd like to go ahead and offer the exhibits into evidence, 1 through 36.
Any objections to any specific or any of those exhibits, Mr. Hall?
I don't believe that I've actually seen Exhibit 36.
Okay, well, I will admit, let's do this. I'm going to admit 1 through include 35. Knowing what a return mail certificate is, it is not going to have any significant impact on this case, I wouldn't think, other than if it becomes an issue who didn't get their mail.
I assume that it's not going to have anything that's objectionable.
No problems. We're going to admit 1 through 35 without objection. 36, we will, during the first break that we have, we will take care of that one. All right.
Okay, I'll go ahead and call Paul Silver as a witness.
All right, if you want to go out and get him, please. Would you identify yourself for the record, please? First name, last name, spell your last name, and give us your mailing address. And do it slow enough we can actually write it down and get it right.
My name is Paul Silver, S-I-L-V-E-R. My address is 1990 Southwest Mill Street Terrace, in Portland. It is the house immediately to the north.
Okay, I just need the address.
Subject property.
Zip code, please.
97201.
All right, would you raise your right hand, please? You solemnly swear a firm testimony about to give us truth, whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
I do.
Mr. McKee, your witness.
Mr. Silver, I'm just going to let you go ahead and describe any effect that this property to the 1970 Mill Street Terrace has on the neighborhood and your property, or anything you wish to add.
Mr. Hall, you have every right to object to a narrative, and we'll talk about that if you'd like.
Well, I would be more specific than that. This is not relevant. the issue in this case is a code violation, and I don't know what his testimony as to values of other properties has to do with a code violation.
I'm not here to testify to values of other properties.
Okay, you just have to hold off. Mr. McKee?
The code violations that are on this house at 1970 Mill Street Terrace have a direct effect on the neighboring properties and on the immediate neighbors based on the hazard that's at this location and the effect of the looks of the house have impact on the neighborhood.
Go ahead.
Your Honor, again, this is a code violation hearing. The only issue in this hearing is whether or not my client is in violation of the code. What other neighbors think or anything else has nothing to do. I don't believe this hearing has jurisdiction to determine that issue. The only issue is she in violation of the code?
Mr. McKee?
Code violations, Title 29, when we cite code violations, the mission of the Title 29 is for remedying the code violations, but also part of its mission is to protect the neighborhood that surrounds the property and the occupants of neighbors that live there. So I feel like it's germane to have the testimony of neighbors who are impacted by this property and the condition of it that it continues to remain in.
All right, I'm going to overrule the objection to this extent, is that I'm going to permit you to ask questions about the code violations and what, in fact, you observe as a code violation. I don't believe that there's any error in having a non-City of Portland person discuss the code issues. For example, it could have been theoretically an engineer. It could have been theoretically some other expert. I will certainly, Mr. Hall, take into consideration in the weighting and the credibility of this witness as it relates to the specific allegations in the Exhibit 1, which lists the violations and the remedies requested. Go ahead, Ms. McKee. I'd prefer, actually, in this case, that you try to ask some specific questions, and I would prefer that those questions relate more to the violations. If you're going to, The only relevancy I can see is related to additional civil penalties and how under my rules, which is Rule 17 of the Hearings Code Office or the Code Hearings Officer, is that I have some discretion within bounds to issue civil penalties based on a number of factors. One of the factors is its impact on surrounding properties or impacted people. So let's stick with the code violations as much as possible. Go ahead, Mr. McKee.
Ms. Silver, can you tell me how long you've lived at the property at 1990 Mill Street Terrace?
My wife and I, Janet Klapstein, purchased our property and moved in August of 1991. Shortly thereafter, Mr. McCulloch, who's the predecessor to the current owner, Cynthia Hilliard, moved in and purchased the adjacent property. In June of 1995, Mr. McCulloch approached me and said that he wanted to make some changes to the house, and he told me he did not have permits to do that. He came in with a giant shovel and proceeded basically to dig out the hillside in front of the house and substantially alter the garage that was there. He told me repeatedly over the period of the next couple of years with apology that he intended to make some corrections and to fix this. He also told me that he was making some internal changes. In fact, at one time he invited my wife and I over and we went through the house and he pointed out some things that he had changed. Again, it was my understanding that these were done without permits. And in my mind, at least, there arose the question of some structural issues at that time, but I'm not a structural engineer and I, of course, didn't pursue it. Ms. Hilliard, at some point, and I don't know exactly when or under the circumstances, moved into the house while Mr. McCulloch was still alive. Mr. McCulloch subsequently passed away. And some of these same issues that we had had with Mr. McCulloch starting in June of 1995 continued in our discussions with Ms. Hilliard about the property. On and off over a period of many years, this is now 17 years, over a period of a number of years, a number of people came in and out. We would occasionally talk to some of these workers. They would again address things on the property. I do not have personal knowledge whether or not the work they were doing was permitted, but I do know that on and off periodically people would come and go and then they would disappear. And on some occasions people would just simply move into the house and they would stay there for a couple of weeks or a month and then they would leave. Ms. Hilliard does not presently live in the house. The last contact I had with her that I can recall at least was 5 years ago. 5 years ago, after 12 years of ongoing negotiations with the neighbors and dispute with the neighbors about what had been happening at this house and its dreadful condition, we had a neighborhood mediation. And I attended that, as did several of the neighbors, as did Ms. Hilliard, and as did, I believe, a man named Barry. And I don't know, I think Barry brought some plans. I don't know if he was an architect or who Barry was. And at that time, there was general agreement reached between Ms. Hilliard, the neighbors, and the neighborhood association to address and correct these problems. Ms. Hilliard herself, on several occasions over the couple of years, over those years prior to 2007, this neighborhood mediation, told me that she was sorry, that she intended again to address the problems with the house. And on the mediation 5 years ago, assured us once again that this was it. Once and for all, we were going to take care of this problem, or she was going to take care of the problem. We have had, my wife and I, and I know the neighbors have had, over the last 17 years, many, many, many contacts with the city of Portland trying to address this problem with the city code violations. It is not only a visual eyesore, it is not only, in my view, presenting substantial structural problems. If the hearings officer would go look at this, I think you would see that there are these metal, steel devices that are poured on some poured concrete foundation, which hold up the house, and that's necessary because the pinnings of the house, the front three pinnings underpinning the foundation of the front of the house, are resting precariously on a cutout of rock. And on at least one of these piers is basically hanging out over into the, substantially hanging over into the air there. About half of the pier or more is exposed. And so these steel beams, which must go 25 feet into the air, are apparently designed to hold the house back from falling into the cavern, which was created when Mr. McCulloch in 1995 dug out the rock hillside in front of that. The property is now fenced. That is the front of the fence so that people can't park there. And that's fine. It's private property. I have no objection to that. Certainly Ms. Hilliard can do what she wants with the property. But my objection is that we have an ongoing issue. I have observed to the south of Ms. Hilliard's property an open or a I don't know what kind of line it is. I don't know whether it's a water line or a sewer line, but it is exposed, at least the last time I saw it several years ago. I don't know what that is, and I don't know codes, but I've never seen a pipe like that exposed on the property, and I don't know what its purpose is. We are of the view that we want no trouble. The last thing I want to have is neighborhood trouble, and I respect and like Ms. Hilliard. But after 17 years of living next to this eyesore, we are looking for something to be accomplished to conclude this.
Any additional questions, Mr. McKee?
No additional questions.
Mr. Hall?
Mr. Silver, who do you work for?
I work for Lindsay Hart, Neal & Wyclef.
Do you have any expertise in this area?
I'm not sure what area you're talking about.
In code violations.
I have done some very limited code violation work. So I'm in a very minimal way associated with codes. And I've done a fair amount of work to our own house, and that has involved me going into the city codes to get a better understanding. So I have a layperson's, probably better than a layperson's understanding, but certainly not any sophisticated understanding of codes.
Do you have an understanding as to what you believe the code violations are here?
Over the years, I have read a number of the exhibits and the documents within the city file, so I'm generally familiar with a number of the code violations that have been found on this property, yes.
What do you understand them to be?
Well, I understand originally that, and this is going back now from 1995, I understand originally that the property was dug out, that is the front part of the house, and that front part of the garage and the rock was dug out without a permit. That is a violation of the code, as I understand it, and I have read those code violations. Secondly, I understand that in pulling out that property and exposing the foundation of the house, that then permitted the house to lose structural stability, and it was my understanding from, I believe, speaking with Mr. McCulloch, although I can't be sure after 17 years, that he was directed by the city to come in and hire a architect or an engineer and establish a foundation which therefore would address those problems. I understand, third, that he put in some sort of stairs. He also put in adjacent to the house an elevator, which I am told did not meet code, and in fact that he was instructed to, he or Ms. Hilliard, again, it's been so long I forget who was in charge of the property when, but this open, rusted outside elevator, which used to screech up and down, and that was there for about 7 or 8 years, and I am told that that was in violation of code and that that was also taken out. I am also aware that Mr. McCulloch, during the period of the time that he lived there, would open up certain outside walls to put in windows. And again, from my discussions with Mr. McCulloch, he was not working with a structural engineer when he did those things. I have read in the file a number of other code violations. From memory, I can't recall what they are, but they are substantial.
To your understanding, what are the code violations that exist today?
I have not read the current file to see what is existing today, except to the extent that the code violations which led to the mediation in 2007, according to my understanding, those issues have not been resolved. In general, I can't be more specific than that.
Okay. You said at one point in time in the past you thought the elevator constituted a code violation.
That was generally my understanding, and it was my understanding it was ordered to be removed because of that.
And was it removed?
It is removed.
Okay. Any of the other things that you've talked about, have they been corrected, to your knowledge?
Well, if you're talking about the visual eyesore, no. If you're talking about the issues involving the water runoff or whatever it is coming from that pipe, I've not looked recently, but when I had seen that some time ago, and this would probably go back a couple of years, that was still ongoing. I'm not generally familiar with what efforts Ms. Hilliard has made otherwise to address the code violations.
All right. When's the last time you actually were on the property?
I knocked on the door of the property when she had a tenant living there about 7 or 8 months ago, within the last year. And that's the last time I was on the property to speak with the tenant.
You said the mediation took place in 2008?
I believe it was 2007.
Okay. Was there work going on the property at that point in time?
There's been work going on off the property for so often, I don't really know.
Sir? Thank you.
For example, wasn't there a crane on the property at one time?
There has been heavy equipment on that property on and off, starting with the big shovel that came in and hauled out the hillside 17 years ago. And then there was a crane, because I think the timing over there, so many years, the timing has been there was a crane at some point, I believe maybe it was there to install those giant steel beams, but I frankly just don't recall the details.
All right. Have you ever gone and looked at the city file?
I have seen a lot of the city file online, but I've not gone and looked at the paper file.
All right. I don't think I have any other questions, Mr. Frank.
Anything further, Mr. McKee?
Just one question. Mr. Silver, do you feel like the property, in your lay opinion, appears safe as it stands?
No.
Thank you. Nothing further.
Mr. Hall?
I have nothing further. I would ask that you direct the parties who are sitting in the courtroom not to comment on the evidence in this case.
I think I did that, and I will comment once again, as there is no showing of support or opposition in any way, shape, or form. It's simply not appropriate to the process. It's not respectful to both parties, so we just won't do that again. All right? Thank you. Do either of you anticipate Mr. Silver to be a rebuttal witness?
No.
No.
Mr. Silver, subject to Mr. Hall's objection, you may stay if you'd like. Is that correct?
Yes.
Or you may leave, which means you're excused, and that always sounds like we're in school and you're getting excused and you have to leave. You don't have to leave, but you have every right to leave if you wish. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. I do have to leave in a few minutes, but I'll stay.
Thank you very much.
Mr. McKee, any additional witnesses?
No additional witnesses.
I'm not trying to help you because you're not going to call yourself as a witness?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm going to call myself as a witness. Thank you.
And I'm not trying to help that much, Mr. Hall, but I will tell you that Mr. McKee has been in hearings before. Few of them have attorneys, and I will tell you that maybe there's a couple of us in here that are attorneys, but the non-attorney folks tend to be somewhat intimidated by that process. If your client had been unrepresented today, I would have gone out of my way to make sure that she had equal treatment.
Mm, I understand.
All right. Mr. McKee, would you raise your right hand, please? You solemnly swear a firm testimony about to give us truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
I do.
Proceed.
I'll go over a brief history of the property here, but before I do that, looking at attachment A of the complaint, I would ask that if there's any objection to those list of violations, and if Ms. Hillier would stipulate that those exist.
I just want to make sure, is it acceptable that the witness for the respondent be present?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
I just
Certainly.
Want to make sure.
Certainly, yeah. I understand he's a contractor for
okay.
Ms. Hillier.
No, I just want to make sure.
Oh, I thought he had left.
He did, and he came back in.
Oh.
And he now has the ability to stay based on the comment by the city.
All right.
So he's no longer excluded.
All right.
Go ahead, Mr. McKee.
Mr. Hall has any objection to these list of violations or whether he can stipulate that they exist or not?
I'm aware. I've seen attachment A of the complaint, the list of violations. I'm willing to stipulate that that's the city's position, that those are the violations that are at issue here. I'm not willing to stipulate that all of those currently exist.
Okay, let's just proceed. We're not going to have any stipulations regarding violations on this.
Okay, one. Sure. Okay. Basically, this is a longstanding case opened in 2001 by the city. The violations may have existed before that, but our first records go back to the original violation letter in 2001. We mailed that letter to Joe McCulloch, the owner at the time, and informed him of the violations that we were aware of then. I believe that Mr. McCulloch passed away in about 2005, if I'm not mistaken. At which time Cynthia Hillier took possession of the property and ownership of the property. In all that time, there have been a long list of permits taken out and subsequently canceled for the work. And what's remaining in violation in the attachment A here are the violations that we still have existing on the property.
I need you to speak into the microphone, please.
Okay. Back in after a number of letters were sent out to Ms. Hillier, we convened a hearing, and I'd like to have the hearings officer take note of that. An order was issued in May 25 of 2006, based on a stipulated agreement that the city had reached with Ms. Hillier for the repairs to be done at that time, with certain consequences were those repairs not made. The repairs, I believe she made an attempt to do these things, to make the repairs or to demolish the property. Only one of those issues was resolved, which was the hoist elevator at the time, and that was subsequently removed under permit, just as it should have been. The other violations remain and are reflected in attachment A. There's not a lot of history I think I need to go into here about these violations, but I think I don't know how to express it. It seems pretty self-evident that the file's been open for so long with so little action, and as a result, the city would like is requesting certain relief to be asked for too. So I can go into that relief at this point, or offer Mr. Hall an opportunity to speak.
It's your testimony, so I'm not going to dictate where you go with it.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and ask for my relief. The city's asking for correction of all the violations in compliance with city codes. The city is also asking for civil penalties in certain amounts. To cover cost of inspections, 8 inspections at $145 per inspection. These numbers are only based on inspections since the last hearing occurred in 2006, June 29, 2006. The cost of this hearing, $1,215.
Could you turn the microphone closer to you, please? Just to, yeah, there you go.
At this point, I'm going to suggest that the additional civil penalty of $5,000 be dismissed. At this point, the fines are so heavy on the property that I don't really see any point at it. I want to go back here briefly to Exhibit 28, which is a lien accounting report I generated on the city records March 28th of 2012. And the last page of that report comes up with a total for all the city liens on the property of $205,630.36. The majority of that lien is based on the hearings office penalties, which accrued up to Actually, these are broken out by different submittals to the auditor's office for the liens that accrued over the years for the item 5 in the stipulated agreement, $100 a day for each calendar day beyond October 31st, 2006, that the violation and the complaint were not corrected. And in any event, the bottom line is the $205,000 figure the city liens on the property. So I'm concluding there that the $5,000 really isn't going to make any difference as incentive to get this work done. So as an option, I'm offering in my relief that the respondent obtain the required permits for all the work, whether it be for legalizing the unpermitted work or for removal of the work, which also needs to be under permit, to issued status within 60 days. And a penalty for that is vacation of the property. Next, completion of all corrections within 120 days. That means completion of all work, final inspections, approval on all required permits, and the penalty again is vacation of the property. When I talk about vacation of the property, the reason for doing that is that I don't believe it's safe for anybody to live there, and I don't believe that the owner should benefit from the property while being in violation of city codes, while as using it as a rental or a residence. The city's also asking for demolition of any of the unpermitted work or the structure involved if the violations are not corrected within the above listed timelines, and given also the effective date of the hearings officer's order. And then those costs be held as a lien against the property. We're also asking for cost recovery in the event that the property is vacated. For example, if there's a legitimate tenant in the property, the city would possibly have to relocate that person, and we'd like to recover the cost for that. Actually, that's in the next section. In the event that we vacate the property, we would secure the property and make sure that it was not accessible anymore without permission from the city. The city is also asking for personal liability. At this point, leaning the property has not been effective in getting the violations corrected. So we're asking the hearings officer to make the any future costs, penalties associated with this property as a personal liability against Cynthia Hilliard. And we're asking for the hearings officer to retain jurisdiction in this case for a period of 180 days. I'm sorry to do this out of sequence here a little bit, but I want to go through briefly and demonstrate the violations, if I may. On item number one, calls for, it indicates the structural and electrical work was done without securing the required active permits, inspections, and approvals. And as a portion of those, the excavation has been done between the house and the garage without benefit of permits and inspections. I've supplied photographs in my exhibit packet to help demonstrate those conditions there. And let's see which, get one here that exhibits this the best. These pictures are kind of dark, but if you look on page 8 in the upper left photo, you'll see there's a distance between the house and the garage there. And also page 5, you can also see the excavation a little more clearly in the upper left photo. It's a sheer wall directly under the edge of the house there, and there's a space of about 10 feet maybe between there and the garage. That was never done with any permits. That's the supports for that. I don't believe are sufficient to support the house under there. Again, the same picture, page 5, upper left. The support pier that Mr. Silver was speaking about, you can see it right sort of in the middle of the picture. This, it is hanging halfway off the edge there, as he described. See the metalwork, all the exterior metal, rails, decks, stairs, they were all installed without any permits. And those you can see exhibited through the entire photo packet here. They extend along the north side of the house and on the east side of the house. The lower section of the bottom floor porch, if you look at page 4 in the upper left photo, you can see where that's built in there. That was originally just a porch. Now it's been enclosed, and that was done without permits. Also, the upper deck area on the third floor at the east side was enclosed without permits as well. And that's also visible, page 4, upper left photo. F, the garage at the east side. If you look at page 4 on the lower, on the right-hand side, you can see what the garage looks like at that time in, page 8, you can see the upper right photo. It shows the garage with approximately 2 stories built on top of it. That was done without any permits. Subsequent to that, the structures on top of the garage area were removed also without permits. And the current condition of that garage is exhibited in page 1, photos upper right. It's basically just a stonework outline there. Item number 2, attachment A, portions of the exterior siding and walls deteriorated and missing. And that applies mostly to some siding that's coming off the house at the underneath the decks. Page 1, photos upper left, you can see where the soffit siding material is coming off from underneath the structure there. Number 3, permit required, exterior steps required, safety handrail, and number 4, the decks without handrails. Both of those are directly attributable to the new metal staircases, decks, and rails. They all done without permits, all unapproved. So those were like original to the near the first of the case when we started this. Those are also reflected in number 1C. Now, items 5 and 6, I don't have a good demonstration for those. And actually, these were from a previous letter, and I think they applied to the garage. So actually, the city's willing to drop those if there's any objection to them, because I don't have a good way to demonstrate.
Any objection to the withdrawing violations 5 and 6?
No. My understanding is they've been done.
Okay, that very, very well be. I have nothing further at this time.
Mr. Hall, your opportunity to ask questions of Mr. McKee.
Let me see if I understand this correctly, Mr. McKee. The original violation in this case was 2001.
That's correct.
And you think Mr. McCullough died in 2005 and Ms. Hilliard came on title?
That's approximately correct.
You don't think she was on title before that?
What I have demonstrated is that she became the owner in approximately 05 with her name on the title.
Yes. That's what you show?
That's what I show.
All right. I think you said there was an agreement in 2006 for her to do certain things.
In stipulated agreement.
Yes, May 26, 2006.
Yes, entered with the hearings office, yes.
Were there time deadlines on that stipulated agreement?
There were.
You might take a look at that. It looks to me like the last item to be done pursuant to the agreement had a time deadline of approximately August or September of 2006.
October 31, 2006. Is that the one you're referring to?
Yes.
Okay.
Is that true?
That's true.
Okay. Here we are, 2012, 6 years later. Why did it take you from October 2006 until now to bring any proceeding to enforce this agreement?
I would have thought that the penalties for missing the deadlines would have been sufficient incentive to do that. But with our resources and our funding at a low, we just haven't had the time to pursue this fairly complex case.
So the city let 6 years go by and accumulate $205,000 worth of liens against Ms. Tellier?
That's correct.
All right. Now, I believe when you were asking for relief, you said you wanted $145 for 8 inspections. I'm assuming those are somewhat yearly inspections?
There's different criteria have changed over the years for our inspections, but typically we like to get up there at least once a year.
All right, because I was looking at your pictures you submitted, mm-hmm. and you have pictures to 2007, and then you picked the pictures up again in 2010 and 2011.
Okay.
Were there no inspections between 2007 and 2010 or 11?
I'll have to review that just real quick here, okay. If I may. That's our inspections typically are recorded on the you say between 2006?
Well, I'm looking at your pictures.
Okay.
And there's pictures from 2001, 2002, 2003, and there's a gap till 2005. Then you have pictures 2007, then 2010 and 2011. Were there gaps in inspections, or were they every year and you just don't have pictures for those other years?
We don't always take pictures when we visit the property. We will periodically we'll go up there and check it and record it in our other records here. There's a kind of a summary of notes that included here, mm-hmm. the history on this case, and I think if you review that, in 2006 there was a long discussion with plans examiners Catherine Hebe and Ms. Hilliard about her intentions on the property. And then I looked at the property March of 07, and again March 14th of 07. A different inspector looked at the property in February of 08. And again in August of 08. And then again in February of 09. And so there have been a few more inspections, actually another inspector in April of 10. October of 10. So yeah, there's been a number of inspections on this property without the photographs.
When's the last date you were up there?
Well, my last note to go up there is August of 11, but that may not reflect the actual inspection. I don't have the actual inspection here.
Well, you signed the complaint in this case on April the 4th.
Of 12?
Of this year,
okay.
2012. And are you saying that you had not been there since sometime in late 2011?
No, I can't say that for sure. I don't recall offhand.
Okay.
I don't have the record of my last date up there.
But would it have been in 2011?
It more than likely would have been in 2012.
Okay. The list of violations that you attached, attachment A, is that based on your last inspection of the premises?
Based on my last inspection of the premises and,
yes.
A review of the records on the case.
For example, it's my understanding that all the gutters and downspouts were replaced in the summer of 2010.
Okay.
When you were there in late 2011, you didn't notice that they had been replaced?
No.
Because they're included on your list of attachments.
I understand that. Okay. Didn't we drop those?
Well, you dropped them, but I'm inquiring as to what you observed at those specific periods of time. Were you aware that a new roof was put on in the summer of 2010?
No, I wasn't.
When you went up there and looked at it, didn't you notice that?
Where was the roof put on?
In the summer of 2010.
No, I say where. Was it on the top of the
house? Yes.
Okay. No, I didn't notice that.
Okay. Are there any other things listed on Attachment A that you didn't physically observe?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Is it possible there are other repairs that you didn't see?
Well, could you be more specific?
Well, I'm just asking, are there any?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Okay. So do I understand correctly what you're saying is you either want work that you deem to be unpermitted to have permits within 60 days and completed within 120 days, or tore down? Those are the two options that you're offering, Ms. Hilliard?
Tore down under permit, that's correct.
Demolished under permit.
That's what the city's asking for, yes.
When you say that, you mean the unpermitted work. You don't mean the entire structure, do you?
No, I do not.
Just the unpermitted work.
I think that was my request in the complaint. Is that how you read that?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm just trying to clarify. Are those the two options that you're prepared to give her, is either get permits for the work and then complete it within 120 days, or remove the unpermitted work within 120 days, or I think you're, or abandon the property?
Or abandon the property, I'm sorry?
I'm sorry, is that what you said earlier?
In my complaint, I'm asking that the unpermitted work be corrected, either through permits or removed under permits. Now, what I'm asking for in the complaint is simply what I feel is the best approach and the most positive way to resolve this. If you have other suggestions in this, I am certainly open to it. The city would certainly consider other options if you have a viable remedy on this.
Well,
the vacation of the property is an issue that I think I explained that the owner should not benefit from being in violation of the code on this property. So we want to make sure that not only is the owner not benefiting, but the property, anybody who stays there is safe. And I believe the property would be unsafe.
Well, since 2006, the city has assessed $205,000 worth of liens. Would the city consider waiving those liens?
The liens that are on there are from different sources. The majority of those are imposed by the code hearings officer based on the stipulated agreement order. A number of the other liens are monthly enforcement fees. Now, our section has an option that once the housing case is closed and the violations are all remedied, then our section will review those for reductions and set up payment plans with people. That's our practice, and we put that into effect quite often. So I'm confident that, at least to some degree, the certain fees that were imposed as enforcement fees would be reduced. Now, I can't speak to the hearings officer's penalties.
What's the property he's owned?
I'm sorry?
What's the zone on the property?
I believe it's residential.
Do you know the classification? Is it R1, R2?
I don't know offhand. I'm not a code expert for planning, so.
All right. Do you know whether the property is currently occupied by anyone?
No, I don't.
Does the city consider the property unfit to be occupied at this point in time?
We do.
Have you posted the property to that extent?
The posting is reflected on our letter that goes out. It says it may not be occupied once it becomes vacant.
Have you ever told anyone that it is unfit to be occupied? Your letter said it may. Have you Have you deemed it to be unfit to be occupied and notified anyone of that?
We notified the owner that it may not be occupied. Now, when you say unfit, I'm not sure what you mean there, but if anyone was living there, they moved out, then reoccupancy is not allowed.
Right.
So I'm not sure if that answers your question.
All right. At any point in time in your dealings with Ms. Hilliard, has she refused to take any action?
She's never directly refused to me to take action. I'm not sure what your question is here.
Well, I'm...
She's either taken action or she has not. Seems pretty clear.
I'm interested in knowing whether or not she has expressed an intent to refuse to do anything. Has that ever been the issue in this case?
No, not that I'm aware of.
Okay. Have you ever been to the property and seen people working?
Yeah, some years ago I was there and met with a couple of different contractors.
Mm-hmm.
The first contractor apparently was dismissed, and a second contractor continued some work. To what degree, I'm not sure.
What were they working on, do you remember?
I think they were working on the garage and on the materials hoist.
Mm-hmm.
I don't recall, it's been a long time.
All right. You were aware that some demolition had taken place?
I am.
Okay. Was that pursuant to a permit?
Yes, there was.
Okay. Do you know what was demolished?
The materials hoist lift was demolished, yes.
Okay, anything else?
Well, the parts of the garage were demolished, but without permits.
Okay. And I think you also testified there was excavation done between the garage and the house?
Yes.
Well, what was the problem, in your opinion, with that excavation?
Well, I'm not a soils engineer or an expert in that, but it was my understanding that the excavation was done without permits, and it was a steep slope, and so it required permits to be done.
And that's all that was wrong, was it didn't have the permit, or is there something structurally wrong that you know of?
Well, I really can't testify as to the specifics on the structural engineering portion.
Okay, so you're really here today telling us that your opinion is that this property work was done without the benefit of permits. And if my client either obtains the permits or takes down the work that is unpermitted, that will satisfy you.
Yes.
And basically, her penalty for not doing those one or the other of those two things for the last 6 years is $205,000.
That's my understanding.
All right. I don't have any other questions from Mr. McKee.
Mr. McKee, anything further?
I just had a couple questions based on his questions.
Comments, you mean?
Comments, questions, actually.
Of who?
Of Mr. Hall?
We don't do that.
Okay.
Okay.
Sure, that's fine.
So nothing further?
No.
Any additional witnesses?
None.
Mr. Hall, do you have any witnesses?
I do.
Would you call your first witness, please?
I would call Cynthia Hilliard.
If you'll identify yourself for the record, please. First name, last name, spell your last name. Give us your mailing address, please.
Cynthia Hilliard, last name spelled H-I-L-L-I-A-R-D, address 3206 North Shore Drive, Southeast Albany, Oregon 97322.
Would you raise your right hand, please? You solemnly swear a firm testimony about to give us the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
I do.
Mr. Hall, your witness.
Thank you. Ms. Hilliard, are you the owner of the property at 1970 Southwest Mill Street Terrace?
I am.
And could you briefly tell the hearings officer how you came to be on title to that property?
Mr. McCullough sold the property to me. When I acquired the property, it was in financial difficulty. And I had to obtain quite a large loan in order to get the property out of foreclosure and to begin correcting the problems that were created by Mr. McCullough.
Do you have a mortgage on the property?
Yes, I do.
And who is that mortgage with?
Currently with Bank of America, originally with Countrywide.
And do you happen to know what the outstanding balance is on that mortgage?
It's approximately $464,000.
Okay. Have you seen any recent assessments on the property?
According to portlandmaps.com, the last assessment for 2011 was the residents. Of course, these aren't according to appraisers. These are the assessors, and they're usually lower than what appraisal you can pay in a professional appraisal for. But the city has the value of the house, the residence, the structure is $165,000, and the land, $402,000.
So approximately $560,000 is the assessed value of the property?
Approximately,
and
yes.
And your mortgage is $460,000 that you owe approximately?
Yes.
Were you aware until you got this complaint that the city had assessed over $200,000 in liens against the property?
No, I was not.
How much did you know there were liens, city liens against the property?
Well, I knew there was a $10,000 lien that was assessed in, I believe, May of 2006 based on a hearing in 2005 when my architect told the hearings officer that the work would be done in 6 months. And I was paying them to get the work done, and it wasn't completed, so I had to take over.
All right, sometime in 2005, you came on the title of the property when you purchased it from Mr. McCullough. Have you been the owner of the property since then?
Yes.
All right. Now, in May of 2006, you entered into an agreement with the city to do certain things. Do you recall that agreement?
Yes.
Okay. What was your understanding of what was going to happen pursuant to that agreement?
There were fines that would be assessed.
And what were you required to do?
Essentially, demolish the structure that was included over the existing garage walls. There was a structure that was built two stories above that, and to the north, a covered area. It was quite a large area that was. It had decks on it. The decks were not, the railing was missing, and there was roofing on it. The roofing was a problem. I had actually re-roofed that area. But so that, and then there was this crane behind it. It was called a materials hoist.
All right, now, the garage, the structure above the garage was separate from the house, was it not?
Correct. And not at all attached.
And your understanding was you had to demolish that structure?
Yes, sir.
And there was what I believe Mr. McKee called and what you just called a materials hoist?
Crane, elevator.
Was it being used as an elevator?
No.
Okay.
It hadn't been used in some time.
Your understanding was that you had to demolish that?
In time, yes.
Okay. Did you demolish the structure above the garage?
Yes.
When did you do that?
I hired a contractor from Beaverton to do the demo. And after I signed the contract, they went on vacation. And I was under a deadline. When they came back, they appeared to not be able to complete the agreed work. And so I fired them. And I took control and hired work through Labor Ready, and Mr. Mendez. Mr. Mendez and I have lived together since 2006, and Mr. Mendez used to be was a licensed contractor, general contractor in the state of Texas, and fully capable of doing the work with me under by permit. So I took a permit out. I mean, there was a permit taken out. Brewer Brothers was working under that permit, and I contacted Mr. McKee regarding the status of it. I kept him informed. We got everything down, and Mr. McKee came to the site, met me and Mr. Mendez, and Bob Wolf, who was the architect at the site, because I was concerned about the cessation of all the fines, that the demo was done. And that was the main structure. This structure was quite large. And you can see by all those pictures in Mr. McKee's exhibits, but I even have better ones to show exactly what it was. And I have current ones to show what it is. And it's and I've secured the property. The property's been secured for some time from access.
All right. What approximately when was that completed?
The end of August of 2006.
All right. Did you demolish the materials hoist?
That was done by permit in July of 2008, and the city inspector, I took that out in around, I believe, the 7th of July. It was completed well in excess of the end of the month, but the inspector did not come to the site until the 28th of July. And signed 2008 and signed my card.
All right. So that was complete?
Yes.
That no longer exists on the property?
No.
Say, besides the removing the structure above the garage,
yes,
and removing a materials hoist, what was your understanding of what else you needed to do?
I'm not really. Oh, well, the gutters, and since I had removed the lower structure, which the missing roofing material, which is part of the complaint, because the south neighbor could see the lower structure that was demoed in August, the roofing, they could see that, and that was probably bothering them. So that went away when the structure went away. But I replaced all the gutters on the upper house, and I even replaced half of the roof up there through a licensed contractor with the state of Oregon.
When did you do that?
That was in August of 2010, July and August of 2010.
And those were completely done?
Mm-hmm.
Now, were you aware that the city was fining you, imposing liens during the interval between the demolition in 2007 and today?
Well, I was my understanding that once that main demo was done, that the fines would stop. And because I got rid of the main problem, which admittedly was a problem. And I took care of that. I even donated my garage door from my garage to my south neighbor, who happens to be here today.
All right.
And I allowed my neighbors to participate, put their trash in my dumpsters as a measure of getting along.
Between the demolitions, which occurred in 2007, and you receiving the complaint, did anyone occupy the premises?
I go up there from time to time. It's fully furnished. Until I got this complaint in April, I was kind of worried about them. I've had the house fully furnished, and I go up there, and it's fully operable. I pay water and electricity, and I do. Time to time, I replaced a water heater, I've replaced a toilet, or, painted inside.
You have?
I have clothes in there.
You have utilities?
Yes, I have utilities.
And those utilities are?
And I've been paying them since, my electricity bill is quite high. And water bill actually adds up, but.
When's the last time you actually occupied the premises?
Well, I go up from time to time. I go up, intermittently. And stay there overnight, and during the middle of the week, I don't stay there 100% of the time, obviously, but I do go up there.
Okay, I'm going to ask you about the list of violations that are in the complaint. And I'll go over those with you, and you can tell me your response to these list of attachments Mr. McKee made to the complaint.
Okay.
I'll start with A under the permit required, and it said excavation has been done between the main house and the garage without the benefit of permits and inspections. What do you know about that?
Well, I believe the excavator was a licensed contractor by the name of Lauren Obrist, and I believe he did get a permit. To my knowledge, he got a permit. The city has canceled several permits, so to their knowledge, if they've canceled it, it never existed, but there was a permit taken out, to my knowledge.
Do you know when the excavation was done?
I believe it was around June of 1995.
You didn't come on title to this property till 2005.
I had no control over the property.
Okay.
None.
So you don't know the answer about the excavation between the main house and the garage?
No.
Okay. Item B says, the vertical bank at the east side of the main house has been excavated to a hazardous condition without the benefits of permits and inspections. Support piers do not have sufficient ground support. What do you know about that?
Well, I do know that an engineer had been hired by Mr. McCullough by the name of Tim Covert, because I used him in 2006 because he had history with the property. He had drawn and made some specifications for ironwork to be done and concrete footings to be poured. And I found in Mr. McCullough's effects, found some receipts from Columet Construction that had done the pour, but I have no idea.
All right.
About that.
Item C says metalwork, all exterior metal stairs, walkways, guardrails, and handrails, support columns and beams have been installed without the benefit of permit or inspections. What do you know about that?
I don't know. I have no knowledge of whether, he got permits. I do know that he had to have, I just don't know.
So that was, you believe, sometime before you came on title to the
property? Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Item D says the lower area under the bottom floor porch at the east side has been enclosed without the benefit of permits or inspections. What do you know about that?
That would be work that Mr. McCullough had done, but I have no knowledge what he did there.
Okay. What is the bottom floor porch?
It's just a storage area, essentially.
Can it be occupied by anyone?
Oh, no, just storage for tools and things.
Okay. E says the upper deck area on the third floor at the east side has been enclosed without the benefit of permit or inspections.
It's not enclosed. It's totally open. If you go up on the deck, you can see it's open. There's just a floor above it. If that's what he's calling enclosed, technically it's not enclosed. It's open to the air. And it has railing and lattice work and cyclone fencing. It's totally secure.
Okay. Item F says the garage at the east side has been altered without benefit of permits or inspections. Two stories were previously added without permits, and those two stories were removed without permits. Yeah. Structure is currently without a roof.
Well, that was the demo in 2006 that the neighbors demanded, the city demanded that be all demoed, which it was. It was very costly to hire Brewer Brothers and then to take control and get the job done. I had to get the job done. That was my goal, to get the job done.
All right. Number two says portions of the exterior siding and walls are deteriorated or missing.
No, that's not true. I believe what he's referring to is on the deck, there's some pieces that we slide in. And then when there's heavy winds, those things slide out, but they slide right in. And that's the only missing, and that's not siding. That's just on one of the decks. And I suppose when you look down and look up, you can see some of those pieces, sections, have blown off. When it's not windy, I get up there and put them back in.
All right.
But the siding is intact.
Three says exterior steps lack required safety handrails.
That was part of the demo, and I believe another witness can be more specific on how those. There was railing there, but they were taken out with the main demo in August of 2006.
Okay.
We were planning on. Okay.
That was in August 2006.
Yes.
Did you do that pursuant to that agreement you signed?
Yes.
All right. Four said the deck lacks minimum 36 inch high guardrail with intermediate rail space so that no object larger than a 4-inch sphere may pass through. What do you know about that?
Well, that's not true. They're at the required height. There is horizontal pieces, yes, but I have lattice work in front of that, and it's been secured, nailed to the railing structure, so nothing can get through. And on the north side, I have cyclone fencing, which is at least 3 to 4 feet, depends on which level you're talking about. In some cases, it's 8 foot tall, so there's no access. And I've also locked and secured areas so that there's no access for safety reasons and liability.
All right. And, of course, you testified you replaced the gutters and you replaced
yes.
the upper portion roof.
Yes.
Okay. And those were in the summer of 2010.
Yes.
Since 2006, who have you had working on the property for you? You talked about the demolition, which you gave us. Let me back up. Since 2007,
mm-hmm.
who's actually worked on the property for you?
Greg Lee Roofing, Leaf Guard, myself, Mr. Mendez, a plumbing contractor. Plumbing contractor corrected some hose bibs, replaced a sink, corrected some various internal, it's repair and maintenance, which is, as a homeowner, you take care of as needed.
I know you brought some pictures to the hearings today. I'm going to hand you these pictures.
Yes.
I'd like you to look at them one by one and identify what they are. I can number these pictures as she identifies them.
If you want to give them to us, the normal process here, and I understand that it's not everybody's process. The normal process here is if you want them to be part of the evidentiary record, you would put them on the flat surface over there. We give them our exhibit number, and then we give back everybody copies, which will be in black and white, not color, but that's what you're stuck with.
All right, that's what I'd like to do then.
Okay, then why don't you do that? And while you're doing, after you complete that, I want to talk about some logistics here.
All right.
So why don't you put them on the swinging gate over there that's got a flat surface, and we'll take them from there. All right, what I'd like to do is talk about timing and process. We had scheduled this hearing for 9 o'clock. It's now 10:25. We have another hearing at 10:30, which creates inconvenience for everyone, and I understand that, but we normally code hearings do not last any extended period of time. Let me just pose a couple things for you both. And then they are made as suggestions and not meant as dictates in any way, shape, or form. But it seems to me, based on the testimony of Mr. McKee and Ms. Hilliard, that we have a fairly broad gap of what the existing violations are. In other words, some of those, it seems to me, in the defense of Mr. McKee, is it might be somewhat difficult to see that they were actually corrected. And so to take them off without having seen them corrected or actually inspected it would probably be improper. So it seems to me, number one, we have the issue of just whether or not there are violations existing. And that's sort of like in a normal trial, proving the contract existed or proving something exists. That's the first step. And in order for any relief to be entered, there have to be violations that in fact exist. At least one or more violations on the list have to exist. So that seems to be sort of logistically, number where are we really with that? And it seems to me that in the best interest of time for everyone, as they often say, the seeking of the truth, is that it would be nice to know exactly what, in fact, the violations are. Secondly, it seems to me that there are two parts that I want to talk about just briefly, and I'll get to my logistics issue in just a sec. The first is, and I am drawing inferences from questions of Mr. Hall, that the amount of civil penalties assessed by the hearings officer perhaps are bigger than they should be. And Mr. McKee's response was that he really has no control over that. Mr. McKee is correct in that. I do, though. I actually have some authority over the amounts of civil penalties. And so it seems to me, number one, is are we going to have on the table $205,000? And I'm rounding that only because that's the number I keep hearing. I have no real understanding of what that number should be or is. But whether or not we're going to discuss that. Number one, so I think that's been inferred by Mr. Hall, and if I was in this position, I certainly would do that. Although I have to admit, if I'd sat in his chair when we first started, I would have said it was a long shot. But I'm trying to fold all these things back together eventually. The second part of the remedies section, which I think is important, from my perspective, is whether or not the remaining issues are, the violations are, is whether or not those continue to merit vacation and or demolition. And I will tell you from my perspective, and I have been a listener here, I have not interrupted in at all, but it seems to me that there is a position of Mr. McKee is the demolition of what, you know, if you do that, in other words, you take care of the demolitions that are required, that if you do that under permit, that in other words, the demolitions have their own separate and distinct permit, that, and those are inspected and finalized, then he's happy. The inference I get, or the suggestion I get, maybe I'm misunderstanding from Mr. Hall, is that the demolition perhaps does not require permits in and of itself. And if I misinterpreted that, I'm apologizing, but I want to make sure that's entirely clear, because I believe I'm hearing two sides of a story that is going to have to come to some resolution. So we've got violations, we've got civil penalties of $205,000, give or take a bunch of money. And we have the potential remedies that include vacation, not abandonment. Abandonment has a very different word here, vacation and or demolition. So those seem to me as the three issues. So I'm now going to fold all this back together. It seems to me that based on what I've heard today, and I'm going to take your side at this point in time, Ms. Hilliard, if in fact you are correct that as many violations have been taken care of, as you indicated, the violation list is going to get smaller, and then it's going to come down to perhaps the ones that, in your language, you didn't know. In other words, McCulloch did it, you know, Mikey ate it, I didn't eat it, so don't blame me, all right? And I'm telling you, I'm really not concerned whether or not you did it. This isn't a criminal trial. I'm concerned with the existence or non-existence of violations and how we ultimately correct those. So with that in mind, I'm going to make a suggestion, which you have every right to say you don't know what you're talking about, and we'll simply continue this hearing. But I'm suggesting that there be an inspection done by Mr. McKee, and it be limited, and I will, Mr. Mahal, for your assurance, I will limit it, that there will be no new additional violations noted, and it will not be used as a basis to file any additional code violation cases. Now, that doesn't mean they couldn't come back and view things from another time, another place, and do it. But I'm saying I don't want the pretense here is to get in and find a bunch of problems. What I want to do is concentrate on, I would concentrate on the alleged violations that we have in this list, because that's the only reason I'm here, is to determine whether or not the violations exist and whether or not the remedies are appropriate. So I'm suggesting that a mutually agreeable time be established, Mr. McKee, with Mr. Hall, Ms. Hilliard, with Mr. Mendez, whoever you'd like to be present. I'm not concerned who the audience is, but you get together and do an inspection. All right. You come back with a stipulation as to what you agree to, and a list of those that you don't agree to that you want to continue to fight about. That would make us more efficient from our time. I'm hoping Mr. Hall is being paid for this effort, and that means that I'm trying to minimize the amount of hours that you have to pay Mr. Hall for this process. But Mr. Hall also looks at it as, can I be successful? And I think if we could minimize the number of violations in that form, he's done part of his job. Secondly, I will tell you that I will keep an open mind with respect to the $205,000. I will keep an open mind to that, not because you didn't know about it, because quite honestly, I believe that if you signed the agreement, I consider you an adult, and you had the ability to read that and had the ability to have counsel present or not sign it if you didn't like it. But you read the agreement. I'm not looking at it from that perspective. What I'm looking at is creating some leverage here, and I want Mr. McKee and Mr. Hall to understand this clearly, is I'm trying to create leverage to get something done here. And I would be more than happy to consider, didn't say I would do it, but more than happy to consider a reduction, and that could be either small or very large, depending on how much assurance I had that the corrections were going to occur. But I would be more than happy to consider a reduction in the hearings officer portion of the civil penalties if we got results. I mean, quite honestly, this case is a blight upon the city, and it's a blight upon you, because from neither perspective is there really a good excuse why the neighbors have to continue to undergo the issues that they have with this not being corrected. It should be corrected. I will tell you what I did last week, is I ordered two houses demolished. I have no qualms about demolishing houses and creating a situation where the neighbors are better off. And that was the entire house, not just a portion of it. So I have no qualms whatsoever about being not draconian, but certainly very firm in getting things taken care of. I want this taken care of. So number one is I'm suggesting inspection. Number two is I'm suggesting that you keep in mind what my olive branch is that if you can figure out a way to get this darn thing done and make Mr. McKee happy, and that's really what we're talking about here, because he is the reflection of the city in this case, then I am going to be a happy camper. But if in fact I have any qualms on a case this old, any qualms whatsoever that it's not going to get done financially, attitudinally, whatever it is, then my olive branch is going to get withdrawn. It goes into the fire, and you can fight about the $205,000 by spending lots of money on Mr. Hall trying to do it in a different forum. You have a way to make money here, Ms. Hilliard. You really do, but unless you settle this thing, from my perspective, by getting the job done, then I'm going to sit and watch suffer. All right. What we're going to do is I want to check two dates with both Mr. Hall and Mr. McKee. June 7th, which is Thursday morning at 9 o'clock. Gives you about a week to get the inspection done, assuming that that's the case. So June 7th, 9 o'clock. Any conflicts?
That's okay for me.
Okay, we're going to schedule this. We're going to continue this hearing until June 7th at 9 o'clock in the morning. this is where I become somewhat ineffectual, is I have no ability to tell you what to do now. I made some suggestions. I've offered you some compromises. What I would really like to see, if you had my druthers, is you'd walk back in here and say that you've agreed to a new stipulated agreement, which has some teeth to it. Mr. McKee, I want some teeth to it. And that's Mr. Hall. I'm not going to accept it unless there's some teeth to it, because I want your client to get this thing done. Or let's just fight about it and see where it ends up with that. I don't care. Any questions on what we're going to do?
No questions.
So, table. No. The table is totally yours. It's clear. You fill it up how you wish. I will deal with it on the 7th. Thank you for coming.